here's a story from The World.
This has probably happened to you before. You read something online about the pandemic that seems outrageous. You ignore it. Next thing you know, you hear someone casually talking about it like it's a scientific fact. Vish Viswanathan knows about this chain of disinformation. He's a professor of health communication at Harvard's T.H. Chan School of Public Health. Professor, it's been more than 5 months since the coronavirus pandemic hit the U.S. in a big way. What have you seen with how disinformation has evolved since it started?
I think clearly there has been an increase in disinformation because obviously social media, but also because the uncertainty around how to control it, the lack of a vaccine, absence of an effective treatment, has only created that uncertainty where people are trying to fill in the gaps. So that's one reason. A second reason, which is very interesting, unlike in past pandemics, the spread of misinformation is now aided and abetted by amplification through voices of political authorities.
So just to be clear, we're talking disinformation, intentionally confusing claims about the coronavirus. We may also talk about misinformation, which is misunderstanding that just catches on. As for disinformation, what is the motive of anyone who would be sowing it about the virus?
There is an advantage that certain people can gain by seeding doubts of uncertainty and creating political divides in a country. Some studies have shown that it could be state actors. Primarily, you know, Russia could be one of them, or China, Iran. But it is very difficult to ascertain with any great deal of certitude. There are also non-state actors who are spreading this disinformation, even within the U.S. or maybe outside the U.S., such as conspiracy theories. I'm sure your listeners must have heard of, say, QAnon as one example.
QAnon.
Yeah, who have been also very active in this field.
Can you give us an example of a disinformation campaign during this pandemic that you would say was successful? Like, how did it work and what was the impact?
The most obvious one would be increasing attention. Despite all the scientific evidence, the value of hydroxychloroquine or malaria medication continues to be articulated, right? And that's a great example where it's not misinformation because it has been clarified very clearly that the medication is not effective. Yet it keeps coming up actively. Second example is I have seen videos where state actors have been blamed for certain actions. Now, for example, a Chinese government has been accused of spreading it actively to control its citizens and actively kill them. And of course, there have been also conspiracies against CIA as another actor benefiting from it.
Hydroxychloroquine is a great example, and the claim of its benefits, as you say, Vish, do not go away, despite the claim being debunked by experts. Why is it so challenging to identify disinformation and misinformation and to talk with others about it?
Increasingly, because of the saturation coverage in the media and the penetration of social media, the boundaries between what is credible platform versus what is not a credible platform has become blurred. So one example, so I can see a disinforming tweet, let me put it that way, but immediately, even while it is being debunked, it might be covered in the mainstream media. And particularly if a political actor picks up the tweet and says something about it, then media are compelled. You know, you don't have a choice because it's a very authoritative political figure who's repeating that false information. So then you are forced to cover the story, even if you flag it. You know, these are the reasons why we are finding it so difficult to control them as they keep spreading.
I'm speaking with Vish Viswanath. He's a professor of health communication at Harvard's T.H. Chan School of Public Health. We're talking about disinformation and misinformation during the pandemic. Professor, what do you do when you hear someone rattle off something about COVID that you just know is patently wrong? Do you correct politely?
There are two groups of people out there. So there are groups of people who are genuinely disinformed, who are trying to make sense of it. To people like that, I generally guide them to some trusted sources. It could be CDC, it could be WHO. So I guide them there if they are genuinely misinformed or disinformed and they want more information. But it is a second group where persuasion or education is unlikely to work because they're already convinced about a conspiracy. There's not a lot you can do, because the more you try to talk to them, the more likely you'll reinforce their opinion or their beliefs.
Looking ahead, there is cautious optimism that there's going to be an effective vaccine. That could really be a game changer. How worried are you, though, by the prospect of disinformation around vaccines? And specifically, what are you worried about?
People are already circling around it, you know, the anti-vaccine forces. We have made tremendous progress thanks to the contribution of scientists and government officials and others. But remember, typically a vaccine development takes a number of years, and we are trying to do all of it in a short period of time. And the question is, how effective and safe is this vaccine? The reason I'm worried about that part is that also leads to the communications around that vaccine. We need to really prepare people on when this vaccination is available. Not everybody will get the vaccine right away. We will need hundreds of millions of doses, if not billions, and people have to wait their turn. So there will be a big debate who should get it first, and there will be controversy around that. Second issue is a misinformation. Already they have begun. People are questioning the vaccines, and people are saying that, you know, this is a part of a conspiracy to promote vaccination. And so we need to be prepared ahead of time that there will be a lot more misinformation around this vaccine. Even a small problem could be amplified and magnified by the anti-vaccine forces and others, and we need to be prepared for that.
What do you think are the most effective ways for large organizations and governments to push back against disinformation?
Large organizations and governments have been very reactive and not very proactive when it comes to misinformation and disinformation, especially around vaccination. When the science is on our side, on the right side, I think it's very critical to have a plan in place by being completely transparent and open about vaccines and other issues, whether it is safety, whether it is efficacy. You have to be open. You have to be honest. Because public health communications in these kinds of situations depends on transparency, trust, and credibility. And it's important to be out there being very open about it.
Vishwanath is a professor of health communication at Harvard's T.H. Chan School of Public Health, speaking with us about coronavirus disinformation and misinformation. Professor, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.